All the Timberwolves do is win. Well, one out of four ain't bad. They took the first one last night, though, despite the fact that the one game that the Timberwolves, the one team the Timberwolves did not want, that we all agreed on in the postseason, was Phoenix. They get Phoenix, and frankly, Pete, near flawless. I mean, early on, I think it was close, but we'll talk about the third quarter and how they just stepped away. But last night, I mean, you look at everything, the entire body of work of everybody on that roster. I was not only impressed, but incredibly encouraged going into this series now, up 1-0, where this Timberwolves team looks like they're going to finish. This looks everything like, and again, it's one game, but if they continue to follow this formula, this is looking really good for the Wolves, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. And they played what the Timberwolves have made this year look like, which is they're great on defense. They held them under 100 points, and we came out really strong on offense. So what they did was basically the blueprint of the 2023-24 season, and they stepped up and did a great job. Now, that's one game, so we don't want to get too far in front of ourselves, and the Suns are a really good team, let's be honest, but we took it to them, and in every way, it seemed like we were able to beat them. And I think it, you know, we were kind of going back and forth and more joking than not, but Karl-Anthony Towns, he shot pretty well, played enough minutes. Yeah. He looked pretty good, put up 19 points. So I think it was really good to see him back in the lineman, in the lineup as well.
I really liked Chris Finch's rotation last night. Yeah. I really, really did. He did not try to get too much from Karl-Anthony Towns. And listen, that's a good night. If you can only if he only has to log at this point where he's going, I think he had, 26 minutes of the starting lineup. He had the fewest amount of minutes. I love that. You still get a 20-point win, or pretty close to a 20-point win, with the likes of, you know, with Karl-Anthony Towns not having to do too much. I thought his shooting was phenomenal. Defensively, you could see he had trouble keeping up when he did get isolated with Kevin Durant. But, I mean, is there a better mid-range jumper in the league at this point than Kevin Durant? I mean, that guy is just, he pops in a step or two, hops back, other than maybe Anthony Edwards, who could do the same thing. But, I mean, Kevin Durant, and I'd have to look up exactly how old he is now. He's been in the league
35.
For a long time. That guy, he's 35. He absolutely still has one of the sweetest and smoothest mid-range jumpers around.
And he's 7 feet tall. So, yeah. You know, talk about a guy who's kind of got it all. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns is great, but the way Kevin Durant moves around on the court, he looks like a guard. He looks like a guy who's 6'4" or something like that, almost like Anthony Edwards. And he's 7 feet tall, and he can shoot the lights out. My wife and I were at a game a couple years ago at the Timberwolves and watched him when he was with Golden State, just watched him in warmups, just shooting the ball. Absolutely incredible what he brings to the team, I think, for the Phoenix Suns. But let's be honest, Alexander Walker comes out. He literally gives us everything you could ever want from a guy like that. Naz Reid is
your
a great
guy, Naz.
Yeah, I got to bring it up. You know that. But he got his 19 minutes. He gets 12 points. He played really well. As a sixth man, I really have been impressed with him all year. I think he's done an absolutely phenomenal job. And there's nobody out there like Anthony. Yep. You know, when you're looking at Edwards right now and you see what he's able to do, the dunks, the steals, the block shots, and he throws up the points. And he actually had a really nice shooting night for the first time in a little while, especially against the Suns on the three-point line. He was able to do about 50% there, so that was good.
I think he had 33 points last night. Regular season average against Phoenix was just 14. And I mean, it really seemed like as you looked towards the end of the second quarter, you could just kind of tell he was starting to heat up. You know, like, all right, here it comes. Third quarter, he's incredible. And there comes a point, I'm watching the game, and there came a point where literally the only way that they could stop him, and the Timberwolves knew it, they were triple teaming Anthony Edwards. Triple teaming him. And so a couple of those times he was still shooting. You know, he jumped in, stepped back, shot a beautiful shot. But what I really liked most, and I think what was really great about his game last night, is that he didn't try to do too much. He did a lot. Mm-hmm. But once they were double and triple teaming him, he was dishing. You know, he'd find Rudy inside every now and then. He found Nas on the wing a few times. I mean, it was just it was just incredible.
Yeah, I was impressed with him. You know, let's go back for just a minute. If you wind back the clock, what, a year and a half ago, and a lot of the naysayers that were so negative on Rudy and that trade that we did for Rudy Gobert, I'll tell you what, he's lived up to what we wanted out of him, right? I mean, defensively, why are we so good defensively? Why do we hold teams? We're literally in NBA, we've been somewhere near the number one spot all year for points against. And I look at a guy like him, he did 16 rebounds, and he's starting to score a little bit more. He actually is participating on the offensive side too, which was not something we necessarily were looking for. We had enough guys shooting the ball and all, but I think Rudy with 14 points yesterday, that's a statement as well. And I'd love to see him shoot even more because he's usually somewhere very close to the bucket and he has a pretty good shooting percentage because of it.
Yeah. Having a guy that can just lock down that interior is so important to the scheme that Chris Finch runs. And I mean, he built that scheme, of course, around Rudy. So a lot of credit to Chris Finch on building what's worked. And it really, the trade doesn't look so bad anymore, does it? Walker Kessler, okay this year. Not nearly as good as last year. Those draft picks, do you really care if you lose the 26th overall pick for a couple of years? No. I don't care about the 26th pick. Not to mention, they have a pick this year. It's every other year. So you got to be pretty happy with the way that is working out currently.
Yeah.
I was watching the game with my son yesterday, and he said, "Oh, Dad, Anthony Edwards, right?" And we're not he's not a big basketball guy because we watch a ton of hockey, obviously. But he goes, "That's Anthony Edwards." I said, yeah, he's really, really good. He goes, "Really?" And he's in Minnesota. He doesn't want to leave to go to, like, L.A. or New York. And I'm like, no. That's what's great about him. He wants to be the guy here. And you can tell. You know, you can tell that. And that's the one thing I walked away from as I'm watching yesterday. I'm like, I love his swagger. Mm-hmm. You know, he steps back, drains this beautiful three or whatever it is. And he's just like, yep, I'm doing this. And I don't know that a player in the last 15, 20 years, other than maybe Kevin Garnett, who's had that swagger, you know, and that really truly is, and I think Chris Finch even said that, like, that's what this team has been missing. Mm-hmm. It's that, listen, you want to triple team me, double team me, that's fine. I'm going to step up right in your face. I'm going to drain a long two or a three, and then I'm going to smack talk you going down the court because that's how we roll. Like, that's how we're doing it. We have not had swagger in this organization for so long. You forget that attitude, that, okay, come try to beat me, but you're not going to attitude. We haven't had that since Kevin Garnett's first tour of duty. I'm not going to say in his second tour of duty, but his first tour of duty.
Well, and that's everything about Anthony Edwards that you got to love, and you brought it up. It's attitude. The fact that he has no load management thoughts at all. He is, matter of fact, he's very much against him, but I mean, he would never do that. And the fact that he has that mentality, it's like a Kobe Bryant and a Michael Jordan. Now, am I saying he's there yet? No. But I am saying he's got the building blocks for that because you know what, Dave? A lot of people don't know this. Do you know how old Anthony Edwards is? And he's in his, what, fourth or fifth year now? He's 22 years old.
22 years old, yep.
So, you know, he's really got and he's gotten a little bit better every single year. He started off strong, but he's gotten a little bit better. All the pieces of the puzzle for him, and he does bring that swagger. And I think that swagger partially is because those fans love him. We sell out that stadium, and people are excited. Minnesota has truly become a basketball town, and I give Anthony Edwards a lot of the credit for that. We were great with Kevin Garnett. There's no doubt about it. Yep. A great player, and the guy was unbelievable in every way. But Anthony Edwards is even at a different level. He's in that guard spot that's so much like the days of Jordan and Kobe and some of those guys that are leading the team. And I think he's right there as one of those kind of players for the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth, granted, of course, noting that Garnett never had the supporting cast that Anthony Edwards has. He had Cassell and Sprewell for a year, and that was a very good trio. But nothing like a Karl Anthony Towns or Rudy Gobert, all of these guys.
Right,
yeah.
What's also interesting, and again, you know, you look at the seasons. I'll go to Kevin Garnett's fifth season because his fourth season, I think he only played 40-some-odd games. He averaged 22 points a game that year. You know how much Anthony Edwards averaged this year? Almost 26 points a game this season.
Yeah.
Almost 26 points a game. More games. I believe more minutes played. Nah, it's not more minutes. So he got him a little bit in minutes. But I mean, if you're looking at, and I'll do it because it's fun to do it.
Yeah.
Who you'd rather have in their fourth season with this cast? If you took Kevin Garnett and put him with this cast, who would be better? Would it be Garnett? Granted, they play different positions. Would it be Garnett or would it be Anthony Edwards? Who would you rather have?
I like the spark of Edwards. I like everything about Edwards, by the way. And just for a second, I was lucky and smart enough to make one great decision with my kids. We were sitting in Chicago. I was looking in the newspaper. I'm talking about, you know, looking at this Farragut High School and see that Kevin Garnett and this group is all playing basketball. And I'm like, you know what, guys, we're going to a game because next year, this guy's going to, you're going to have to pay $150 at an NBA game to see this guy or more. We're going to go pay $5 and we're going to go watch Kevin Garnett. So it was really, really great. And I'll tell you what, that was a high school team that was as good as anybody ever, but Garnett definitely stood out.
Well, if you had your choice listening to the show today, let us know who would you rather have fourth year, this cast of characters. Would it be Kevin Garnett or would it be Anthony Edwards? Styles One Financial Talk and Text Line. Hit us up 651-461-9226. Let us know. We will talk probably. I'm sure we'll get back to more Timberwolves. Next game, by the way, now not until Tuesday. So you've got some time. We were talking about this. Why is it not till Tuesday? I don't know. Probably because of television. That's what we always blame, right? It's TV's fault. But coming up next, we're going to put a wrap on the Wild season, which has ended this week. And the Rookie of the Year discussion, probably one of them, I think, one of the more hotly contested discussions in the last couple of years. Bedard versus Brock Faber. And I'm going to tell you why I think Brock Faber should win Rookie of the Year. Shocker. I'll tell you that one coming up next. You're listening to The Huddle on WCCO. Well, the Minnesota Wild season ended this week. Disappointing.
Did
no
it end this week?
This year.
Was it this week?
Yeah, it may have ended. Probably
a couple weeks
sooner.
Ago. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, physically, there ceased to be any more games at Xcel Energy Center this week. And now we all that we have to do is decide, one, who the Wild are going to draft this year, but that's a couple months away. But two, does Brock Faber, Minnesota's own Brock Faber, have a chance at winning Rookie of the Year? Pete, you and I have talked about this a lot. I have my thoughts. Connor Bedard is great, and I think we all agree he's going to win. I know he's going to win, and it's just stupid. But your thoughts from what you've seen of Brock Faber this year, also, I mean, the fact that he was a surprise, the fact that he kind of came out of nowhere, where do you sit on this?
You know, the tough part for me, and I'm sure for you too, Dave, is, you know, Bedard missed so much time. And enough games. There weren't a huge number of games, but 14 games or something like that, right? So, I mean, that's a little bit of a difficult comparison to me to, because you just don't know. But I'll tell you, I love the way Faber plays. He reminds me of a hockey version of Ant, right? Because he's on the offensive side, but he plays defense just as well as he does on offense. And that's what you need in players. They've got to be able to play, whether it's in basketball, both sides of the court or either side of the blue line or however you want to frame it. But, you know, are you a great teammate and are you playing on both sides? And if you are, you've got a shot to be somebody that everybody wants to talk about because so many focus just on the goals that they score and everything else. And I think Faber is one of those guys who can do it just about anywhere. And being unselfish is really, really important. So it's, I think he's a great type of person to build upon for the Wild.
I'll say this, and this is to me the argument comes down to this. Is the trophy someone's to win or is it someone's to lose? Is the award someone's award to win or is it someone's award to lose? Because this truly, more than any other year I can remember since maybe Connor McDavid, this was someone's award to lose. Connor Bedard was Rookie of the Year before he stepped on the ice. Everybody knew that.
Yep.
But I don't think that's what this is about. I don't think it should be about that. It should be about, is this award someone's to win? The idea that Bedard, quote, would have been better if he hadn't broken his jaw because he missed a large chunk of the season, doesn't mean he should win. This isn't about what you could have done. It's about what you did. and the numbers and the play and the points, not what he could. Yes, he was on pace for a 70-point season, which is crazy. It's insane. It's a big number for a rookie. But he didn't get there. He didn't. And I would argue that Faber plays a tougher position playing defense. But you look at what Bedard had around him. He had nothing. I mean, the Blackhawks are so bad. They're so bad. And the Wild, not a ton better, but you could argue he had some better defense around him. And even though they didn't have Jared Spurgeon for a lot of the season, he still had Jonas Brodin. He still had Jake Middleton. There were a few other in that decor.
Dave, were you a little concerned with that Faber started to fade a little bit towards the end of the year? Because you see that in football, basketball, all this. When you play the number of games that these players play, it's completely different than any part of their lives.
Well, it's come out, too, that he had two broken ribs the last couple months of the season? Yep. So that's a pretty good explanation.
Yeah.
It is. And ultimately, it's a much longer season than he's ever played. It is hard because and he's logging more minutes. You know, he logged so many. I think he was averaging up to the 20. I don't have the stats in front of me. But, I mean, for a rookie defenseman to log the minutes that he was logging was crazy. Here's the thing that really bugged me, and I know people don't love the stat. Connor Bedard was minus 37. That means of the goals that he was on the ice, that he scored, were on the ice, and the goals that were scored against him when he was on the ice, it was minus 37.
That doesn't sound
good. He doesn't
good.
Play defense. He doesn't play both ends of the ice. That bothered me a lot. And people were like, oh, that doesn't count. That doesn't matter because he had no one else on the line with him and blah, blah, blah.
I mean,
you
can't discount that the supporting cast in Chicago is markedly worse than the supporting cast in Minnesota.
Well, was it? I mean, at
any point
this year.
Not saying Minnesota's great, but Chicago was all-time bad.
At any point this year, that roster was probably half-filled with guys who really should have been playing in the minors and getting more time. Maybe not half. Maybe a quarter.
Yeah.
Yes, the Blackhawks were awful this year. Mm-hmm.
I think that's got to be. I still think Faber is my winner, too. And, I'm biased about it. Of course I am. I want the players that I like to win the awards. But Chicago is so bad. I don't know if I take plus minus into it too much.
The year Cale Makar won, he had 50 points. I think Faber finished with like 46. Those are the kind of numbers. And Quinn Hughes did it, but his was the same year as Makar. We all know Bedard's going to win. I know this. Mm-hmm. But and I don't know, maybe the another thing that I had read, maybe the way to fix this is to have an offensive rookie of the year and a defensive rookie of the year. I don't love that. I think it cheapens the award. But I think any other year, if it was last year or the year before that or the year before that, I think there's a very good chance Brock Faber runs away with rookie of the year.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Well, yeah, that's my thought. Anyway, probably not gonna get a whole lot of dissent amongst you this morning, but always happy to take your talk in text on the Styles Financial talk in text line 651-461-9226. We got some text coming in about Timberwolves, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But first, it's the fast break, and it's coming up next.
All right, guys, we already hit on the very fun things going on in the NBA. We had the Minnesota Timberwolves absolutely blown out the Phoenix Suns in game one of their playoff matchup. A lot of other fun matchups happening as well. Denver and Los Angeles is happening. That's a fun one with the Lakers. The play-ins already occurred. Some fun games out of the East with Philadelphia and the New York Knicks facing off in the first round as well. But how about the dark side of the NBA? We haven't really hit on it. There was talk last week at about this time about an investigation into Raptors forward and brother of star Nuggets player Michael Porter Jr. But this was Jontay Porter. And on, I believe it was Tuesday, may have been Wednesday, it came out that the investigation was complete and that Jontay Porter is banned from the NBA for life for betting on games. A Pete Rose-esque betting on your own games, including yourself. He was betting the unders on himself and then pulling himself out of the game. I have always been, up to this point, pretty pro sports gambling. I think it's just, it's made sense to me. Why would we ban this? But I'm here to say I was naive, and I've been radicalized in the other direction. I can't stand sports betting now. I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg. I think this is only going to get worse. Dave, talk me off this ledge. that we're not at the tip of an iceberg here with sports gambling?
I don't know if I can. This is really disturbing in this day and age that you can that this still happens. There's an arrogance to it, which I don't think will go away, that players think that they can get away with anything that they want and do whatever they want. I don't think that attitude's going to go away. The NBA will likely crack down big time. Certainly they are going this and he will be the he won't be as established as Pete Rose, but he will be the Pete Rose of what basketball is, because he's 24 years old and his career is over. And that's a shame. All for what? I don't know what his salary was off the top of my head, but I can't imagine that he actually needed the money. And so I do think that this will be enough to deter guys who may or may not be thinking about it or already doing this to stop. But I don't think you'll still get rid of the idea that I'm a professional athlete and I can pretty much do whatever I want because I've always thought I could. And I do think that there's a number of athletes who still believe this. This is really concerning. I don't know that I can talk you off the ledge, Charlie. I'd love to try, but this is really terrible. It's a huge black eye for this league. They had no choice but to completely get rid of him altogether. They had to, because they can't have this happen again to anybody, number one. Number two, this can't happen. Imagine if this was a star player. You know, Jontay Porter's not the face of the league, but imagine if this was just Joel Embiid or you know, someone, a really huge name.
Yeah, and
that would be awful.
And I mean, this is clearly not just an NBA issue. The NBA, obviously, they're the ones in the headlines right now because this happened with them. But this is every sports league. And listen, they're taking a lot of money from these sports bettors, the official sports bettor of this league and that league. I don't know how you can keep doing that, Pete.
It's all about greed, let's be honest. And again, you guys know how critical I have been on some of these commissioners over the time, whether it was, you know, which ones have done a great job, not in the NBA, not in the NFL. And those are the specific ones that I think stand out the most right now, because, as you guys know, we didn't even used to have teams in Las Vegas, right? I mean, that was something that didn't even happen. They
it's
didn't
taboo.
Want people that...
Yeah.
And then we changed that. Then we changed into the NFL and all these different sports leagues, decided... with greed, hey, we're going to take your money for this whole betting thing to be a part of who we are, which is something they always shunned against. I'm with you, both of you. I think it's a bad decision. I thought it was a bad decision as soon as they did all this approval of all the betting, because it's just liable to happen. Somebody's going to do it, right? I mean, and let's think about basketball for a minute. If you've got five guys on the court, and one or two of those guys, in this case one, but could be even more. If you've got a couple of guys who go, hey, look, you know what? If we only score this many points in this game, we've got the opportunity to make quite a bit of money on this whole thing. It's just, it's there. And because it's there, it's something that is going to get worse and worse, not better, but worse and worse. I can't possibly imagine how this ends in a good way unless they finally break away and say, you know what, forget the greed side of this thing. We're going to stick with where we are. Because they have plenty of folks out there that want to sponsor these sports. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
Are they not educating these kids? I mean, he placed 13 bets through an online betting account, which totaled $54,000, payout around $76,000, turning out a total winning amount of $21,000. Did they not think that they would find out? How stupid do you have to be?
When you're putting that much money on a reserve player, role player's stats, it seems. But it's far
they
from
that. They
have
your credit card.
It's far from that, too, though. I mean, we're a couple months into 2024, and we've already had betting scandals in baseball with Shohei Ohtani's translator, in basketball with a player being banned from the league for betting on him against himself, and in college baseball where a coach has already been fired for giving illicit information to gamblers. It's happening all over, and it only seems to be picking up speed here these last few months. We're going to move on. There's a lot more we could talk about with that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, we all kind of are agreeing with each other and patting each other on the back, so we're going to move on. Pete, over to you. We're into playoff season for the NBA and the NHL. We've already discussed the Wolves have started off strong in their series as the Wild sit at home. My playoff-related question, Pete, what in any sport is your favorite, most memorable playoff series of all time? And I said series, though, so let's keep it away from football and not, you know, any of the Vikings stuff. But what is your all-time most memorable playoff series?
I'd have to go something probably, and it wouldn't be Minnesota related. I lived in Chicago for a long time, but you know, when the Bulls were on fire, just watching some of the series that they had, whether it goes to the West Coast with the Lakers or the East Coast with Boston, whoever, or Detroit, I'd actually probably go with Chicago, Detroit, NBA, Michael Jordan. I mean, that was an unbelievable time for basketball and absolutely incredible what both sides were able to do. So I think that's the direction I'd go.
Dave, you got one?
I grew up in New York, and for me, it was the 1994 Stanley Cup series, but it was the Eastern Conference Finals, which I believe it was the Rangers and the Devils. Uh-huh. And there's a great call there, and I think it was Game 7, where it was Game 7 overtime. And it was the Devils and the Rangers, and Stefan Matteau, who played for the Rangers, scored. And I mean, it was just it was euphoric because I grew up a Ranger fan, and they hadn't won a Stanley Cup in 42 years. And I just remember the call, and I don't remember who had the call, but you've heard it, where the guy screams out, Matteau, Matteau, Matteau. And it was so cool because I was at a restaurant watching it. My parents had taken me there because we didn't have cable, so we're staying way past our bill, but just loving every second of it. And I just remember thinking, like, this is the greatest. Like, I was so invested in this. What an awesome payoff for this moment. It was really fun.
Good answers. Like both of those. And neither of them Minnesota sports. I mean, how many series have we had? We've had hockey, baseball. And
that's fair.
The Twins series last year where they finally won, I guess, is mine. I don't even know what to say for my favorite. Dave, moving on to you. Question number three. As we've already said, the Wild sitting at home. Well, not all of them sitting at home. Seems like Kaprizov, Zuccarello, and Brodin, at least, were all spotted at the Wolves game last night, taking in that playoff environment, hopefully getting some inspiration for next year. But most of them sitting at home. Discussions abound at the X, what the offseason plans are going to be from the draft. As we've already said, the lottery is coming up in the next couple of weeks before we get into the actual draft. There's also free agency. And, of course, there's even more discussions about future discussions at this time next year once Parise and Suter's contracts will be officially off the books. But my question, Dave, what does an ideal offseason look like for the Minnesota Wild in 2024?
In 2024, I think it hinges two things. One, you have to get Brock Faber signed now because he is going to – if you let it sit, he's going to need a long-term contract. He certainly deserved it. Played phenomenally this year, which we've already talked about. But, and yes, we all know that there's not a ton of room for what the Wild can do, but there are a lot of young players that you want to get up there. I also think that there's an idea of something has to be done, and Bill Guerin said this, I think, in his press conference on Friday, that they have to do things to make sure that this team looks like they're really trying to compete, because Kirill Kaprizov is on a 5-year deal, and when that deal is up, you want to make sure that he still wants to play here. And so I don't think, you know, financially, obviously there's some issues and they're a little strapped. I think there's some players that that are going to come off the books a little bit this year. But I think ideally the best to me, the biggest thing is one, figuring out if Jesper Wallstedt is the real deal. And the goaltender that came up from Iowa played well near the end of the year, had one game during the season that played really against Dallas, which is just a no-win situation. They did re-sign Marc-Andre Fleury, so that tells you more than likely that they still aren't 100% on what Wallstedt can do. Because you don't sign Fleury to one more year if you don't think that Wallstedt's ready right now. So maybe he takes another half a season. So I think you sure up that the goaltending situation. And then I think you just get healthy. We just you need some of these guys, the Jared Spurgeons, the Marcus Foligno's, to come back and play full seasons. And it makes a big difference when you're without your top defensive pair. And I don't think people really took into account just how much this team leaned on Jared Spurgeon and his health. And Kirill Kaprizov, once he started playing better and was healthier, looked like a different player in the second half of the season. So I think you got to sign Brock Faber. I think that's number one with a bullet. And then it's just getting guys healthy and figuring out what the depth chart looks like next year.
Yeah, Dave, that goaltender situation, though, could it not also be that they're looking at Gustavsson as disposable at this point if they're re-signing Fleury?
Well, so here's the only thing that bothers me about that is because then at the end of next year, you only have one goaltender. So if I think Gus – I think in my mind the plan is – was Fleury this year and Gus and Wallstedt next year and then Wallstedt and whomever else. But Gustavsson may – I mean, if you want to get rid of a good chunk of salary and you want to get some real assets in return to help you be competitive next year, I could see that as a possibility. I mean, he's certainly one of your most tradable assets at this point.
Yeah.
So I mean, it could. It gets some salary off your books and probably get you a couple pretty good players in return. So it – it's possible, I guess. I don't know the ins and outs of his contract, but I guess that's a possibility. But I don't know if I – Gus is – when you have two goalies who are proven commodities and one who aren't sure, you're not sure of yet, I that makes me nervous.
Yep. Well, these conversations are surely happening over in St. Paul as they head into the offseason. Also, one last hockey note, a congratulations and a fond farewell for one of the guys we just mentioned. Zach Parise officially announced he is retiring at the end of the Colorado Avalanche's playoff run. His regular season career is over. Colorado plays tonight against Winnipeg, 6 p.m. in Game 1 of their series.
Which, by the way, people should everyone who hates the fact that Parise and Suter got bought out, this is where it pays off. Because if I'm correct, if I understand the whole recapturing all that stuff again, which I don't know that I do, but I'm pretty sure that financially this works out better for the Wild because he's going to retire when he still had time left on his contract.
Yep, yeah, one more year left. He'll be retired at the end of the season. And good luck. You know what? People may be mad about the way that those tenures happened. He's a Minnesota hockey legend. I think overall he should be and is beloved in this state. And if he's not, he should be more because it was a wonderful career for a really great player. Last question here to you, Pete. The NFL draft this Thursday. I don't think – have we even mentioned our special guest next hour at this time? Is that
we haven't.
We haven't? Joe Alt, top tackle prospect, local, who went to Notre Dame, starred for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish at left tackle, started his career at right tackle, but also went to left. He's going to be a very highly picked player come Thursday. Top 10, I think, is very realistic for Joe
Alt. Top 6.
Top 6, there you go. Top 10, even more realistic than I thought, I guess. He'll be on in 1 hour from now, 11:45. But back to the question here. Fun few days of content coming up. I always have a lot of fun leading up to the NFL draft, and I love watching the entire thing. I watch into the 6th, 7th rounds.
Nice.
It's very fun for me. We've heard rumors pretty much at this point that the Vikings are going to take just about every single quarterback that's available in this draft. One person says this thing, one person says another thing. We'll see what actually happens. But I want you to go on record now. We are close enough. What do you think happens with the Vikings in on day one of the draft? Do they, one, trade up? Two, who would they take if they trade up? Or three, who are they taking if they don't trade at all and they have two first-round picks?
Yeah, I think it's a huge mistake if they decide to trade up. Because I've yet to ever see it work. Ever. I just don't name me one that ever worked. Anyway.
Josh Allen. I think that worked pretty well.
Did they give away the farm for him, though?
Yes. They gave away
Ricky Williams. Oh, wait, no, sorry.
Three plus.
Yeah, the Ricky Williams worked out. Herschel Walker worked out pretty good. Some of these, all these quarterbacks that you just raise up. I'm going to say this. You can get the right guy because it's a deep draft. So for the Vikings, I think they should, and hopefully they will, stick with number 11. Don't take a quarterback there because they're undervaluing, I think, Penix the most. I think we can get him at 23. And if we can get him at 23 and everybody else will start pointing and saying, well, you know, what are they doing? Why'd they take that guy? That guy just happened to basically not have an injury the last couple of years. He's played unbelievably well, goes to the national championship, and is just a remarkable athlete. So I think that he would be a great pick for the Vikings.
I am almost 100% with you. I'll say 90%. One, I don't think they should trade up because at 11, I think they'll have their choice of Michael Penix or Bo Nix. Mm-hmm. I also think that there's a very good chance that maybe J.J. McCarthy might be there because I don't know, Pete. Call me crazy, but I just think this is smoke. I think this is smoke and mirrors. J.J. McCarthy's rise up the charts here to me seems like every year there's one quarterback or one guy who goes, oh, this guy, he's incredible. Everyone wants him. We're going to trade it. I just think it's smoke. I really do. And I think the Vikings are smart enough, and I hope they're smart enough to stay at 11. Yep. And you have your chance of 2 to 3 really good quarterbacks that are there for you. And I don't think you need to. And then you still get another pick in the first round to get another really much needed position fill.
Defensive tackle.
And I think those other quarterbacks do slide down. By the way, right now I'm looking at multiple different boards that I see J.J. McCarthy going at least top 6, by the way. At least top 6.
I'm just not on board.
Guys,
with him.
You both said what you want to happen. Real quick, we don't have time. What does happen? What is going to happen? What do the Vikings actually do?
The Vikings package up, and it's going to be a huge mistake, and they're going to get a quarterback that's not who they think he is.
Dave?
Oh, gosh. I'm gonna hope that for once we have smart people over there. They're going to stay at 11, and they're going to draft Michael Penix Jr.
All right. Got to go to break, guys. We'll be back in just a few minutes.